Now we're holding on page Tzadiktes in Baba Basra, or is Koftes. We learned previously about a couple of things involving Yaakov and his children, and why Yaakov gave the Bechorah to Yosef, and why he took it away from Reuben, etc. So now the Gemara brings in another question having to do with Yaakov and his children and his descendants. Bamine Abba Khalifa Keruya, near Rabbi Chiya Ba'ala. Abba Khalifa Keruya, Keruya could mean, could refer to his job, could refer to the place he came from, whatever. He asked Rabbi Chiya Ba'ala. The Chlolon, in the general count, in the overall count of the number of Yaakov's descendants who came down to Mitzrayim, Ata Moitzah Shivim. The Torah tells us there were 70. Or with Trotan, if you count up the individual names, Iata Moitzah El Shivim Choser Echad, you have only 69. You count all the names over there, you have 69. So where's the missing 70th? The Torah tells us there were 66 that were coming down to Mitzrayim. You have Yosef and his two sons, make 70. So where's the missing one? Marshall points out, when you get down to it, really the question could be asked specifically about Leah's descendants. The Torah lists by each of the Imahos, it gives a subtotal for each one of them. For Leah, it says 33, but if you count it there, you only have 32 names. So the answer is Amalei, said Rabbi Chiya Ba'ala, answers him, Tiuma Hosa in Dina. There was a twin sister born together with Dina. Dichtiv, the Ace Dina Bito, as the Pasuk says in the listing over there, that it mentions all the names, and an Ace, his daughter Dina. Now the word Ace, or S, comes to add something. So it comes to add, there's another girl who was born together with Dina as well. Well, the Gemara asks Elameata, Tiuma Hosei and Binyamin. By that logic, you would have to say that there was a twin sister born with Binyamin as well. Dichtiv the S Binyamin Achiv Ben Imoi, because the Pasuk also uses the word S in connection with Binyamin. Tosfos points out that there are other Midrashim that say that each of the Shvatim had a twin sister. There is, in fact, there are various variations among that, including an opinion that Binyamin actually was a triplet born together with two sisters, and that Yosef had none, and that Dina was born around the same time as Yosef, and you have the famous Gemara about him and Dina being switched. In any case, so by that logic, you would have to include Binyamin's sister as well. Which pasuk the Gemara is quoting over here, Anaf Yosef points out there's various possibilities which pasuk exactly the Gemara is referring to. Marsha also points out, because for example, if we're saying the pasuk of Es Binyamin Achiv Ben Imoy, talking about that Yosef saw Binyamin together with the other Shvatim when they came down the second time, well, there'd be no reason to mention Binyamin, even if Binyamin had a twin sister, there'd be no reason to mention her over there. It's not like, I mean, Yosef asked that bring your other brother down. He never said anything about sisters, so there's no reason she would have accompanied them. In any case, and then Marshall also goes into some detail over here talking about that even, you know, not necessarily here Tosfos is saying that all Gemara evidently is disagreeing with the Medrash that each of them had a twin sister, not necessarily because the Medrash also says that each of them married another one sister. Before Matan Torah, after all, there was still Bnei Noach at the time. A man is allowed to marry a sister who he shares only a father with. So, for example, fine, Leah's children couldn't marry any of Leah's daughters. They'd have the same mother, but they could marry twin sisters who were born with one of the ones from Bilhah or Zilpah or Rachel, and so forth with all the other ones. So there, and Marashar discusses it, Ramban discusses it on the Pasuk, that given the Pasuk explicitly says, these are the 70, besides the wives of the sons of Yaakov, so therefore, if they were these twins, well, then it's both. There were other twin sisters as well, or even triplets, but they're not counted because they were married to the respective Shvatim and were counting family units, basically.
We must say that Binyamin had two sisters, because otherwise the math does not match.
Well, there's that too, right? That's another point as well, right? Yeah. Well, on the other hand, not necessarily, because remember, Yosef didn't end up marrying any of the twins. He married Osnas, who was Dina's daughter, who was Yaakov's granddaughter. So, yeah. So it can be made to work, but yeah. In any case, Ramban discusses, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk that if we say that twin sisters were born with each of the Shvatim, we would have to say they all died before they came down to Mitzrayim, otherwise why isn't the Torah list them? That Ramban answers to that, that so what, if the Medrash says that the Shvatim married these half-sisters of theirs, then they're not counted because the Pasuk specifically says, Milavad Neshe B'nei Yaakov, so there's back and forth about that, and Marsha gets into it as well. In any case, the point is, That can't be the answer, that it's just there was a twin sister with Dina, because then you'd have to at least account for there was a twin sister with Binyamin, and why isn't she counted? Omalei, so Rabbi Abba says, Magolis Toiva Hoisabiyadi. I had a precious pearl in my hand, a deep reason to explain who the 70th was, and you wanted to make me lose it. Meaning, in other words, not that he didn't want to tell it originally, because he wanted to the Lachaduri Hudiboy, Rashbam says, he wanted to sharpen Abba Khalifa's mind by forcing him to ask the question and see if he could come up with the answer himself. And when he couldn't, then Rabbi Chiya Abba has to tell it to him. The answer is Hochi Omer Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanina. The real reason is that Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanina explains Zu Yecheved. It was the 70th was Yecheved, which, as we learned earlier, Shahul Rosa Valderach Ledosa Ben Achomus. She was conceived on the way and born between the walls as they were coming into Mitzrayim. As we talked about before, it doesn't necessarily literally mean she was conceived on the way. The trip from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim was not necessarily 9 months long or even 6 months, which is the minimum length of a pregnancy. But it means, in other words, that part of the pregnancy during which she was developing took place on the road, and then she was born as they were entering Mitzrayim.
Between the walls, right?
Literally between the walls would mean it was very common in those days that cities would have a double wall. You find, for example, you ever visit the model of Yerushalayim of the time of the second Beis Hamikdash in the Israel Museum, for example, you'll find on the north side of the city they had three walls. Different ancient cities, it was very common in those days to have multiple walls for defense in depth. So between the walls would mean exactly that, after they passed through one wall before the other. Or if you say it was only one wall, it means like as they're passing through the gate. In any case, therefore, we at Chenema, as the Pasuk says, Asher Yolda Oysel Olevi B'Mitzrayim. As the Pasuk says, that she bore her to lay, that the Pasuk describes that Yecheved, whom Levi's wife bore to him in Mitzrayim. Now, why does it have to mention that she was born in Mitzrayim? Leidosa b'Mitzrayim, implying that she was born in Mitzrayim, ve'in harosa b'Mitzrayim, but she wasn't conceived in Mitzrayim. She was conceived back in Eretz Canaan, and then her mother was pregnant with her on the trip. Marsha points out that the reason what makes the Gemara darshan that is because the Pasuk is saying all of those Ela b'nei Leah Yulod Leah b'Padan Aram, these are the children of Leah who were born to Yaakov in Padan Aram. Now, which all of Leah's children were, in fact, now his grandchildren such as Yecheved were not, but all of those are the ones Haboyim Mitzrayim. When the section begins in Vayigash, Ve'elah Shmois Bnei Yisrael, Aboyim Mitzrayimah, among them are all the ones who were born in Padan Aram. So there it doesn't mean that they were conceived in Padan, that they were conceived elsewhere and born in Padan Aram. There you don't doubt them like that. But here, there's no reason for the Pasuk to mention specifically that Yecheved was born in Mitzrayim. So it means to imply, therefore, that she was only born in Mitzrayim but not conceived there. And the point is, in other words, what's so precious about this is it shows HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makdim Refuah L'Makkah, before they even go into Mitzrayim, they already, as they're coming in, the Eishah Haz Yecheved is being born, and from her is going to come Moshe. It represents the idea that Eber talks about in Asicha. It means, in other words, that you have the power to be able to take the Jewish people out of Golos has to be from somebody, on the one hand, who was conceived in Eretz Yisrael. Otherwise, if she was conceived in Mitzrayim also, like Moshe Rabbeinu himself was, look, Ein Chobosh Matar Atzmei, a prisoner can't get themselves out of jail, you know, a higher power. But if she was also born in Eretz Canaan, then she doesn't have a shaychus as much to the Jews in the time. Therefore, there has to be this kind of in-between thing, and through that, she's able to, the Ebishter gives her the Nesinas Koyach, which in turn she can pass on to Moshe to actually be the Goyal. In any case, so that's the vote, says Rabbi Chiya Abba, that's who makes up the 70th. Now, I mean, you have other explanations as well. Some of the Mephoshim on the Pasuk say that the 70th is Yaakov himself. Look, the Pasuk says, Eis Yaakov, Yishuv Eis Ebo, so Yaakov himself would be one of the 70. The Medrash has an interesting explanation also, that another possibility is Hashem himself makes up the 70th. The Medrash says in a similar vein, for example, when it talks about Yitzias Mitzrayim, we say that there were Kishesh Meis Elefragli, about 600,000 men on foot. So there's a Medrash that says there were actually 599, 999. And the Eibishter made up the 600,000. Another point regarding Yaakov and his children. So Reb Chelboy asked Reb Shmuel Ben Achmeni, or a different gear, so Reb Shmuel Ben Achmeni himself asked Reb Yonason. Anyway, the Pasuk says, so you have like this. Yaakov has been in Choran for 14 years. He worked 7 years for Rachel. Then Lavan switched things, as we talked about last time. So then he had to work another 7 years for Rachel again. So 14 years. And at the end of those 14 years, Yosef was born. Now the Pasuk says, Vayhikasha, you're the Rachel as Yosef. When Rachel had given birth to Yosef, so Yaakov says to Lavan, I want to go home. And in the end, Lavan got to stay another 6 years. So the question is, Maishnok Ki'isilid Yosef. Why at this, when Yosef was born, is punked when Yaakov wants to leave? Now, to be sure, Marsha points out, the fact is that the 14 years were up then. That's a good reason for him to want to leave. Nevertheless, though, there's no reason in that case for the Pasuk to mention that Yosef was born. It should say when the 14 years were up, or whatever, by Yibari Sahi, or some Lashon like that. So it must mean that there's some connection. In addition, it wasn't just that the 14 years are up, it's also the fact that Yosef was born that triggers Yaakov to say to Lavan, I want to go home. So what is it? Amalei, so Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni answers Rav Chelboy, or Rav Yonason answers Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, according to the different Gersois. Yaakov Avinu saw with Ruach HaKodesh she'ein zareh shel Esav nimser el biyad zareh shel Yosef. Esav's descendants, now why did Yaakov leave for Haran in the first place? He's afraid of Esav. So he doesn't want to return until Yosef is born because he knows that Esav and his descendants will only be handed over and defeated el biyad zareh shel Yosef, only through Yosef's descendants. So once Yosef is born, then Yaakov knows he has more reason to consider himself safe. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the Novi Avadia, who himself, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, was a Ger from Edom, so he himself is descended from Esav. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has the expression, we'll learn in a few weeks, as the Shem, that Mineo be Abel, Shadi be Narga, as that's what everyone's in Tanya. From the forest itself comes the handle of the axe that chops down the forest, the same way Avadia himself, a descendant of Edom, is the one who gives the Nevuah about the downfall of Edom. Anyway, so Shenema, Ovadia says, V'hoya beis Yaakov ish, the house of Yaakov will be fire, or beis Yosef lahava, and the house of Yosef will be a flame. Now, a fire is okay, you know, you have a hot coals or something, they'll do something, but you need to fan them up for them to actually have much of an effect. Beis Yosef, we're saying, is like a flame that will have an immediate effect, or beis Yosef lakash, and the house of Yosef will be like straw. So you put a flame to straw, poof, the whole thing's gone. So the same way, once Yosef is around, then he knows he's more safe from Yaakov. Maharsha points out, first of all, so like this. Yaakov had gotten the brachas and he had gotten the bechora. One part of that is that Yaakov is going to dominate Esav until, as the Pasuk says, v'hoya kasha torid. Now, Yaakov had given everything, or had given the brachas to Yosef. So now Yosef is also given the power to defeat Esav, more so than the other brothers. A number of the Mephoshim bring over here from various Midrashim that reasons. So what's the underlying reason? Why does Yosef specially have that capability to defeat Esav? So there's a number of points that the various Mephoshim here, Al-Adaf and in other places, point out about it. The Midrash gives a whole catalog of ways in which Yosef is the polar opposite of Esav. Among many things, for example, Esav denied Tchias HaMeisim. He says, I'm going to die, what do I need the Bechorah for? Yosef specifically said that Pocket Yifked Eschem, Hashem will remember you and take you out of this gullus, and you should take me with you. Why? Because he's looking forward to Tchias HaMeisim. He doesn't want to be left behind in Mitzrayim. Esav, it's brought in the Medrash that when he was born, he damaged Rivka's womb, which is why after that, after him and Yaakov, she didn't have any more children. Mashenkin, on the other hand, Yosef, Adrab stood up to protect his mother from Esav's gaze, as we know, little Yosef, little 6 or 7 year old Yosef, is raising himself up to his full height to try to shield Rachel from Esav's gaze, and a number of other things like that. Then the Medrash mentions something else very interesting. So now let's say the other Shvatim would go and argue to Esav, uncle, how could you have been such a cruel guy and trying to kill your brother because he got the brachas and all that? What's Esav going to say to them? And you with your brother? And they're not going to have an answer. As opposed to Yosef can answer back, Adrabba, look how my brothers treated me, and I treated them with pure chesed after that, lumen me Yosef and Echav, as Altadabba writes in Tanya at the end of Perek Yudbeis, so why couldn't you be like that? So that shuts up Esav, and that defeats him. There are a lot of different reasons that are brought why Yosef is really the polar opposite of Esav, and therefore why he has that special power to defeat him. So the Gemara says Eisrei. So Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani asked Rav Chelber asked Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani, or Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani asked Rav Yonasan. Anyway, you're telling me that every time Esav is defeated, it has to be through the descendants of Yosef. And by the way, in that connection, this is why we always talk about this Mashiach ben David and Mashiach ben Yosef. Why does there have to be a Mashiach ben Yosef? This has to do with it, because one of the jobs of Mashiach is once and for all to get rid of Zara Shalom Malik, and that has to be done, as the Gemara is saying over here, specifically to get with the cooperation of Yosef. But, so he asks him, you have psukim that describe in that at the end of near the end of Shmuel Aleph, you have the story over there. David has been given about David has run away from Shaul. He's run away from Shaul's kingdom and run to Achish Melech Gas. The first time he went there, they were gonna kill him, and he had to pretend to be crazy. The David Mishnah says time of the Fnav and Melech, but then he came back sometime later with 600 men, and this time Achish was more respectful to him and gave him a city that he could have as his headquarters, the city of Siklag. So now the pasuk describes at one point David and his men are away from there for a while, and the Amalekim took the opportunity and captured the town and took all the people who were there, all the women and children captive, and burnt the town. So now the pasuk describes how David, when his men came back, found out what happened, and they set out and chased them, and eventually they caught up with them and defeated them. And the pasuk says, "Vayakim David mehaneshef vada erev lamacharosam." Mehaneshef vada erev lamacharosam. David struck them and fought with them and defeated them from the neshef until the following evening. The Gemara in Brachas actually has a discussion what Neshef means in this connection. Does Neshef mean early in the morning, like to the twilight of dawn, like when it's just starting to become light in the sky? So does it mean an entire day from then until nightfall, or does it mean over a 24-hour period from one evening until the following evening? The Gemara discusses over there what the exact meaning of Neshef is. Anyway, the point is that David is not from Yosef. David is from Shevet Yehuda, and we're still saying that he defeated Amalek. So how does that work? You could say obviously it's just in order to recapture their wives and their children and their possessions and everything. Even Yaakov points out, then you could argue maybe Yosef doesn't necessarily have to be involved with that. But fine, on the other hand, the Gemara is saying that, let's go back to, if we're saying one reason why Yosef is able to counteract, if one reason that Yosef is able to counteract Esav is because of the whole thing with Yosef being sold by his brothers and yet not treating them badly, when Yosef was born, Yaakov didn't know any of that's going to happen yet necessarily, and yet he knew that Yosef is the one to be Esav. So we see that even when it's not a matter of a preemptive war, even when it's just like recapturing the spoils or whatever over here, you still need Yosef to be involved. So how is that if David's involved over here? Amalei, so he answered him, "Da akriach nevi like akriach ksuri." Whoever taught you Nevi'im did not teach you ksuvim. If you learned ksuvim, you would have the answer to your question. Dichtiv, because in Divrei Yomim, it mentions during the time when David was on the run from Shaul, so the psukim and Sefer Shmuel just mentioned generically that various people gathered to David over time, eventually he had a band of 600 men, but it doesn't give any details where these men came from. It just says generally these were people who had fallen on hard times or whatever. But in Divrei Yomim, it gives a lot more detail about various groups of people who came and joined him. The pasuk that we have in V'yit Mechal Matzah Shabbos, V'ruach Lov Shas HaMasai Rosh HaShalishim, is from that section. At one point, Amosai came there with a bunch of people from Shevet Binyamin, and David says to them, "You guys are from Shevet Binyamin. I mean, are you on Shaul's side? Are you coming to betray me to my enemies?" And Amosai says, "No, the Ruach Lovsha, spirit of Ruach HaKodesh, enfolded Amosai," and he says, "No, Lacha David Bimcham and Yishai, Shalom, Shalom Lacha," and Vaikablam David, and David accepted him into his group. So now, the Pasuk then continues, Belechshei El Siklag, when David was on his way to Siklag, which when he got back to Siklag, and found that the city had been burnt and everybody had been captured, then he set out in pursuit of the Amalekim. The pasuk says in Divrei Yomim, Noflu Olav Menasheh, there joined him people from Shevet Menasheh. And their names were Adnach v'Yozavad v'Yidia El Omichael v'Yozavad v'Elihu v'Tzilosai Rosh Ha'alof Mashal Menasheh. These were the heads of thousands of troops from Shevet Menasheh. So we see that there were a whole bunch of troops from Shevet Menasheh who joined him just in time for him to go fight the Amalekim. So there you go, Menasheh's from Yosef. So they were the ones who were instrumental in that he was able to beat Amalek. Most of Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, I have another contradiction. The Psukim and Divrei Yomim also describe as follows. Shevet Shimon, we talked about the other day, was given a portion within the territory of Shevet Yehuda. Basically, the area that was allotted to Shevet Yehuda was much too large for them, so another Shevet was going to get part of it. The Gerdel came out that it was Shevet Shimon, which fulfilled the Pasuk, Achalkin v'Yakev v'Afitzim v'Yisrael, because they were scattered among the Shevet, and they don't have a contiguous territory of their own. Anyway, the Psukim and Divrei Yomim mention that in David's times, Shevet Yehuda had grown so large that they needed that territory, and so they asked Shevet Shimon to move. So where did Shevet Shimon go? So the Psukim describe various groups of Shevet Shimon moved to different places. One of them, as the Pasuk says, Mehem min b'nei Shimon hochu lahar Seir. Of them, some of these people from Shevet Shimon went to Har Seir. Anoshim chamesh meyes, there were 500 men. Uflatio na'aria urafoya v'uzio b'nei yishi b'roisham. They were being led by these four people, Platya, na'aria, urafoya, and uzio, the sons of Yishi. And the Pasuk continues, Vayakwas Sheras Aplait of Amalek, they defeated the leftover remnants of Amalek, Vayeshu Shamadeyemazeh, and they settled in their territory Adai until this very day. So we see that Shevet Shimon, Bapashtus, all these people that are mentioned as leading them, are from Shevet Shimon. So we see that Shevet Shimon defeated Amalek. So how does that work? Amar Rabba Bashila, so Rabba Bashila says, Yishi Nami Mimenash Asi. When we say that this Platya and Arya and so forth were the sons of Yishi, there's the key. Yishi is also from Shevet Menashe. Dichtiv, as you have also in Divrei Yomim, Uvnei Menashe Chefer V'Yishi. So therefore, so this Yishi is the same one. Now, there's no such posuk, Vidritva and Marsha both point out, there's no actual posuk that says these exact words, Uvnei Menashe Chefer V'Yishi. But what it is then the Gemara will often paraphrase and shorten psukim, as for example, you have the famous Vinasan Akesef for Kam Loi, which is a blend of two phrases from two different psukim, and Parashas B'chukosai. Here what you have is in Divrei Yomim, when it lists families of Shevet Menashe, it says there, the Eila Roshe Vesavoysam, Efer the Yishi. So not Chefer, as the Gemara has it over here, but Efer with an Ayin. The Yishi, and Yishi is the same name, and it continues to list other heads of families, other prominent people from Shevet Menashe. So the Gemara is not quoting the Pasuk exactly, but it's paraphrasing it, kind of. The point is that we see there was someone from Menashe named Yishi, and we're meant to understand that that Yishi is the same one whose sons, Platya, Na'aria, etc., are the ones who led Shevet Shimon's battle against the Amalekim and defeated them. So yeah, after all, it was Shevet Shimon that did it. I mean, Shevet Yosef, in this case Menashe, that did it. So therefore, that still bears out the point that every time we defeat Esav, it's always the power of Shevet. It's always the power of Shevet Yosef. And again, lost at Lavo, even now, whatever. It's also Shevet Yosef. It's also Mashiach ben Yosef who accomplishes that. The next couple of dafim in the Gemara continue dealing with various dinim of Bechora, the fact that a Bechora gets a double portion, and eventually you have, it talks about a case, if a person, the Torah gives a father, the Namonus to say that this son of mine is a Bechora, or not a Bechora, then you have various details about that. So eventually you get into the question if you need Edim in Beis Din, that somebody is a Bechora or not. So the Gemara tells, Ahuda Osala Kamehdi Rav Chanina. There was a case one time of a din Torah was brought to Rav Chanina, Omalei, and somebody, two Edim, come together and say, Muchzakni Bezeshu Bechor, I have a chazaka that this guy is a Bechor, and therefore that he's entitled to a double portion of the Yerusha. Omalei Menoya Daita. So Rav Chanina asks the aid, how do you know? There were two Edim, Rashbam points out, but we're talking about right now. He's cross examining the one aid. So how do you know? Omalei, so the aid says the kiyavu also legabe avua, when people would come to this guy's father, omalehu, he would tell them and they wanted a cure when people, particularly people who had an eye disease, an eye infection or whatever. So when they would go to his father, omalehu, the father would tell them. And tell them Zulu Gabi Shikhas Bri, go to my son Shikhas de Bechorahu, because he's a Bechor, Umasi Ruke. And his saliva is able to cure eye infections. So that shows that he's a Bechor. Rashbam points out, by the way,
Bechor has that power?
Yeah, Bechor has that power, yeah.
This particular person has that power.
No, we're saying that in general a Bechor does, but we'll get to that in a second. Rashbam, first of all, points out, by the way, now, this same Rav Chanina himself had a son named Shichas. We learned earlier in the Masechta that Rav Chanina had said that my son Shichas passed away young because he chopped down a fig tree when he wasn't supposed to, when it was still producing fruit. So here you have this other fellow also happened to have the name Shichas. With that said, though, there are other Mephoshim who explain that no, in that Gemara over there, Shichas Bri does not mean my son Shichas. It means somebody named Shichas Bri. So there's somebody else in the neighborhood whose name was Shichas Bri, and here we're talking about a different Shichas. Be that as it may. Anyway, so here, go to him because he's a Bechor Umasi Ruke, and his saliva is able to heal. Habona, at the bottom of the page, points out Rav Chanina himself is an expert in medicine, so he's able to say whether such things work or not. Well, the Gemara asks, V'duma Bukhur De'imahu, so how does that help us? Maybe the father only meant that this Shichas is a firstborn of his mother. Now, that wouldn't help as far as a Chavik Bechorah, because a Bechorah gets a double portion only if he's a Bechorah from the father, not a Bechorah from the mother, as the Gemara derives from Sukkim. So how is that a proof? And the answer is Gemiri, because we have the Kabbalah, Bukhra de Abba, Masi Ruke, only a firstborn from the father, his saliva has the power to heal eye infections. Bukhra de Ima, la Masi Ruke, if he's only a Bukhra of his mother, he doesn't have that power. Therefore, since this guy is saying, since when people would come to the father, and they would ask him to help cure their eye infections, and he would refer them to his son Shichas and tell them he's a Bechor, he's able to do it, then that alone tells us he must have been a Bechor to the father, because that's the only kind where the saliva will actually help. You have the pasuk says about a Bechor, the father, Kihu Reshis Oino, he's the first of the father's strength. You have the extreme as the example of Reuven was Yaakov's Bechor, and he was even, Yaakov hadn't even had Keri before that. Most people aren't like that, but nevertheless, in other words, there seems to be the idea that a Bechor, for that reason, has a particularly strong power, that therefore he has this ability more so than other people. The next couple of dafim after that, the Gemara is dealing with various cases where a person gives a matana. You have the various cases of matnas shchivmana, matnas bori, all those complications where a person wants to give his nechosim, where a person wants to decide the disposition of his nechosim while he's alive, rather than waiting till after he passes away. And you have the various dinim about what he's allowed and not allowed to do in that connection. So that leads the Gemara into talking about that sometimes, from one topic to another, it gets to the point that sometimes you have something where in the course of a discussion, a certain point comes out, a certain point of halacha comes out, but not necessarily do we pask in that way in practice. It has to be what we call halacha l'maiseh. It has to be that the Rav, or the Rosh Hashiva, or whatever who taught it, is not just theoretically it should be so, but in actual practice we're going to do like that. So that leads the Gemara to the following, to the following point. Rav Papa tells Rav Papa and Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua, who are his talmidim, they succeeded him as Rosh Yeshiva in the various yeshivas after he was nifter. Anyway, he tells them, Ki osi piske de dinya di dila kamaychu. If there comes a psak din of mine to you, so I passed in a certain case, and I wrote out I had my beis din write out a maisa beis din saying that I passed in such and such, and he's entitled to this money or whatever. Now suppose that it comes to you, suppose the other guy appeals it, let's say, or suppose he has a further claim, and therefore this thing comes up. V'chazitu be'pircha, if you find an objection to what I said, you find there's a reason to think differently than I do, lo tikru'une, don't rip up the document, don't automatically assume that it's no good, adas sisu l'kamoy, until you come before me, so then you can consult with me. E isli taima, if I have a good reason behind, and Yom Yaakov points out, in chovim l'odom shalai b'fonav, so you can't, when you're not in my presence, you can't automatically dismiss what I'm saying, what I say. So check with me first. E isli taima, if I have a valid reason that I can explain for what I said, amina l'chu, then I'll tell you, and then you have that reason. The iloi, and if not, if I realize that, you know what, I realized I made a mistake, hadar nabi, then I will change my mind, and then gizun tehet, you could rip up the document or whatever. We taka find in a number of places, in the Gemara where Rava passed in a certain thing, and then the Gemara will say, hoda uki Rava amura alei, Beis Hamikdash. Afterwards, Rava set up an Amora, an official public speaker, in front of him, and publicly darshened Dvarim Shamarti Lachan, Torah Sein Biyadi, things that what I told you before was a mistake, and he was the correct halacha. So therefore, the Rava as a Moedala Emes, as a Talmud Chacham should be, and therefore, if I find a reason, if I realize that my svara was no good, then I'll retract it. However, Rava continues to them. If it's after I passed away, don't rip it up, but also don't use it as a precedent to learn other similar cases from. Mikra lo tiku une, don't rip it up, because after all, the avena kayam, if I was still alive, I might have been able to give you the reason. So you can't just say, well, we don't know the reason, therefore we don't have to accept it. There might have been a reason, which you don't chapsach. However, but you also shouldn't derive from it that this can be a precedent for other cases. Because a dayan should only follow what his eyes see. So in other words, after all, you have to use your own Torah svara, and you can't just blindly rely on the fact that I said something. So in fact, we have in Jewish history, you know, we have the Goyim don't argue with the Amoraim. The Rishonim generally don't argue with the Goyim, although sometimes they do. The Rambam frequently does, for example. Achronim don't argue with the Rishonim in general. Again, there are exceptions to that. One of them is this factor, Emodayin al Mashayin of Loyas. A number of Goyim Yisrael have written in their Svarim and in their Shilas or Chuvas that, look, Emodayin al Mashayin of Loyas, we have to know, on the one hand, Im Rishonim Kamalachim on etc. On the other hand, as the Gemara was saying over here, ain't medayin al masha ain't of royis. On the other hand, it's not so simple to go and start slogging up chacham of previous generations and of previous eras in Jewish history just based on your own svara. So there has to be this weighing back and forth, like Rava is telling his Talmidim. The Rambam, in fact, writes in this connection in Hilchos Mamrim that usually we say that a Beis Din cannot be mevatel what a previous Beis Din did unless it's greater b'chachma over minyan. Which is very rarely the case. But you have that Amman writes, for example, that if one Beis Din has decided something using one of the Shloshes Midrash, I turn to Dreshes Behen, and a later Beis Din decides that they should understand it differently, then they're allowed to overturn it. Chochmo Vaminion and all that. Then we say, then we apply what we say in the Gemara over here, Ein Medayin al Masha Ein Avroyas, they have an equal right to interpret using the Yud Gimel Midas as the previous Beis Din did, and therefore they can overturn it. And there's even an explanation in that connection. There was just recently the last couple of sichas from Tavshin Lamed Zayin and Lamed Ches that Lahak has put out for the last couple of Shabbosim and Yom Tovim. There was one of them where the Rebbe talked about in great detail about the whole story with Bnei Deseira and Erev Pesach on Shabbos, because this was in Lamed Zayin. Erev Pesach was also on Shabbos, and Bnei Deseira wasn't sure if you should bring the Korban Pesach on Shabbos, and Hillel came and proved to them that you should. And there's the famous question: how did Bnei Deseira not know that you shouldn't? Among the many, the Rebbe talks about it at length in the Sicha, why that should be so, but among the many answers is based on that. Just because a previous Beis Din had decided with the Yud Gimel Midas doesn't mean that B'nai B'Seira and future generations are necessarily held to that. They should be using their own Ein Ladayin, Ela Masha Ein Avroyas, and see if it's necessary to darshan it differently.
The rule
of Minyan applies, therefore, to Gzeiras and Takonas. If one Beis Din makes a Gzeira or a Takona, then a later Beis Din can overturn it if they're greater than Chochmo of Minyan. But if not, then not. But when we're talking about things that are Darshan with the Yud Gimel Midas, then a later Beis Din can overturn an earlier one even if they're not greater than Chochmo of Minyan. Abboina has an interesting thing he mentions in this connection that a lot of times it'll happen. A person passes away and everybody figures we can slug him up, and they don't realize, you know, look, I mean, he's not around to defend himself anymore. Maybe he shouldn't be so hasty to. So he brings a cute vote. He brings from Elia Bacher. He wrote, if after I pass away, Elie Bacher writes, if somebody wants to slug up what I say, either that other person has to die like me, or he should wait till I come back like Chizam Mason.
That's a good one.
Further on in the perek, again, it talks about all these dinim of matonis and all these various cases where a person decides before he passes away the disposition of his nechosim. Now, normally, you give somebody else a matona, of his property, then that's it. You know, that person has it. It's his permanently. And eventually, when that person passes away, it goes to his yoshim and so on and so forth. But you can have a case and he gives it to him, the other person, only during his lifetime, and afterwards it's going to go to somebody else. And in Lahabdul, in American law, they call it, I think, a life tenancy or something like that. In any case, the Gemara deals with various dinim in that connection. So Gemara says, "Ahu da'amu le lechavre." A person says to somebody else, "Nechosa lecha va'acharecha leploini." My nechosim are going to go to you, but after you pass away, they're going to go. They're not going to go to your own yoshim. They're going to go to ploini. The Rishon Roy LeYoshehava. Now the case was that the first person who he had said that to is somebody who is in law, who is capable of yarshining. He's like, he's a close enough relative. Where was it talked about earlier in the parak? Conceivably, he could have been in line to yarshin him had he not had children or whatever. So Bosse the Shochev Rishon, after the first one passed away, also Sheni the Kotava, the second one is coming and saying it should be mine. That was the deal. It's only as during his lifetime. Sover of Ilish Tameda Rava Lamema, said of Ilish, who was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rava, thought to say when he was serving on the Beis Din for this, Sheni Nami Kashokil. What should happen was, is the second one should also be able to get. It's true, he should be able to exercise his claim and be able to get the Nechasi. Omalei, but Rava tells him no. Dayoni de Chatzatzta hochi Dayoni. The judges of Chatzatzta judge that way. What is Chatzatzta? Rashbam says two explanations. Number one, Chatzatzta is Moshe's chetzi, like Dayonim who only know how to make a pshara. They only know how to make a compromise because they don't know what the actual din is. So they figure they will split the difference and you'll get half and you'll get half, as if it was a suffix. Then he puts this from Ben Chanano, another meaning of Chatzatzta is Beis HaKvaris, so like the Dayonim of the Beis HaKvaris. What would that mean? Ben Yehoyada talks about that. It means, for example, like you had earlier in the Masech that we talked about certain people who would unbury the dead to use them for their magic or whatever. So therefore it means like you have those here, you put policemen in charge of that to make sure people don't dig up the dead. Those kinds of low-level dayonim, those kinds of low-level policemen might not know the actual din like that, but people who are serving on an actual base din should know better. He says, "Lav Heiner de Shalach, Rav Acha bar Rav Shila." It wouldn't this be the same case that Rav Acha bar Shila had sent a message earlier in the Gemara, which is not here in Ein Yaakov, that since the first one is royal Yerusha, since he's a relative who is capable of yarshining him, therefore he gets it as an eternal Yerusha, and it goes to his descendants, and it never goes to the second one at all. Well, Ichsif, so Rav Ilish was embarrassed that he didn't know that point. So Rava says on him, the pasuk Ani Hashem v'ita achishena. I Hashem, in its time, will make it come quickly. Which means, Rashbam says, when the tzaddikim need help from Hashem, then Hashem makes that help available on the spot. The same way, Yud of Ilish, Hashem wouldn't allow that a wrong psak din would come through you. Therefore, Vashkocha prophet, the Eivish Dinei, that I'm here, and now I'm able to tell you the truth before you would come out with a wrong psak din. That's Rashbam. The Ritzvah brings a different explanation from Rabbeinu Chananel. Don't worry that you don't have this great chokhmah yet. When the time comes, the ita, when the time comes that you're old enough and adept enough in learning Torah, when you reach 40 years old, Achishana, then Hashem will quickly bring that you have that kind of chokhmah that you should have at that age. You're not at that point yet, but don't worry, it'll come to you when Hashem will bring it to you when the time comes.
It's
40 years till he gets it. It's 40 years. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Good.
So they came to the court and they said they want a
pshara. The Gemara talks about it. We'll learn about it in Sanhedrin in a few weeks. That's the sham that the dayan should try to make a pshara first under some circumstances. It depends. It's not so simple, but yeah. Ben Yehoyada points out an interesting remez over here when we say Ani Hashem be'ita achishena. Be'ita means be'es hey. He says if you look at the ages in Pirkei Avos, Ben Chomash Shana L'Mikra, Ben Esther Shana L'Mishnah, etc., there are five of them that directly have to do after. There are five of them that have to do with stages of learning Torah. The fifth one being Ben Aboyim Labina. So therefore, so you say, when it comes the fifth time during your lifetime, then you will have that bina, and you'll be able to understand such things. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Hafei Nissen. We just talked about cemeteries and we just talked about Mesim. So here, La'osid Lava, as we know, the Mesim are going to, from Chutzlaretz, are going to come to Eretz Yisrael for Tchias Mesim. How are they going to come? So the Malach Gavriel will bring the body, the Rebbe writes in a letter, that the Malach Gavriel will bring the bodies to Eretz Yisrael. But the Tzaddikim, Hashem will make special tunnels that they can walk through. This way they don't have the Tzar of Gilgal Atzamos. And then the Neshamas will enter the bodies after they reach Eretz Yisrael. Continuing on the halachas of tzitzis. By the way, one thing I forgot to mention when we talked about the other day about a goy doing it, a chereshot of a cotton or whatever, we mentioned briefly about machine tzitzis. So during World War I, the Rebbe Rashab gave a special temporary heter that they could have because he had a huge number of refugees from Poland and Ukraine or whatever that were coming into Russia. So therefore the Rebbe Rashab gave a special heter that the threads for tzitzis, and they needed a huge number of them, could be made by machine. But other than that, no.
Today, made by machine.
So you have, there are machines that are made nowadays. We try not to. We try to have avodas yad because there's you have. Now the point is that, in other words, you have, for example, Reb Chaim Oizer holds that the person who's operating the machine, that his kavana is enough. So the Rebbe Shab was saying on that b'shach b'shach because he had hundreds of thousands of refugees from the war front areas pouring into Russia. That was also when, for example, it was during that time that Rebbe Shab founded the Ezra Press, when they printed the Rostov Siddur and so forth. So they needed a huge number of tashmishi kedusha for them. And so yeah, okay.
The Rebbe also sent machine boxes to the American.
Oh, so okay, so then during the war, what he sent to the American soldiers in the war, okay, same idea. In other words, we don't usually use machine matzahs, but yeah, b'shas ha'tchak is different. Thank you. Okay, getting back then to dinim of tzitzis over here. So you put in four threads, you double them over, so you have eight hanging threads altogether. And psil tcheles, because it has to be cane psila, it has to be doubled over like a cord. And then you have to have each one has to be 12 gudlin in length. A gudl is a thumb, so you measure in the widest part of the thumb. So Rabbi Chaim Noah defines it as about a thumb is about 3/4 inch. So the tzitzis strings then would have to be, after you fold them over, the length of each string has to be a minimum of 9 inches. In practice, you go by tzitzis in the stores. You go by tzitzis strings. String your own. They're usually a lot longer than that. The Alter Rebbe also defines it. It's like if you take 7 grains of barley and put them next to each other tightly, or you have 2 of them put end to end loosely, then that will be the equivalent of the shear. So again, Rebbe Avraham Chaim Noah holds.
What? The actual tzitzis.
Yeah, we're talking. Yeah. No, we're not talking about we're not talking about after all the windings and things. The Alter Rebbe is saying after you fold them over, you take the tzitzis, you put them through the one hole or two holes, depending on the different minute. Now you should have 12 gudlin hanging over here and 12 gudlin hanging over here. After that, you're going to start winding and tying and everything. In practice, I mean, you really have, you know, the 7 of the threads don't, 7 of the strings don't get much shorter during the making of it, because you're not winding them. All you're doing is tying 5 double knots with them. The shamash ends up getting a lot shorter, but that's why they sell the shamashim a lot longer to begin with. So at the end, they come out approximately equal. The Alter Rebbe goes on to say that, no, the 12 we measure after you did all the windings and after you do all the windings and after you do all the knots. So you measure them from the actual, from the edge of the garment. Now, this is what we're talking about when you have one hole, like we have in a talus gadol, then you start from the edge of the garment. What goes from the hole until there doesn't count. So therefore, in practice, each one would have to be 30 gudlim in length. So that way, when you double them over, then you have 15, and then you have three gudlim from the hole until the edge of the garment. You look on your talus gadol, you'll see it's that distance from the edge, as Alter Rebbe talks about later on, about the details with that. And then you need one more gudol for the knots themselves, and then you have 12 hanging total. So it's not 12 loose, it's not 12 of loose threads when you finish all the windings, but it's 12 from the edge of the beged until the ends of the strings. That's to be 12 gudlin, 9 inches then. Again, with our talus cottons, where we have 2 holes and you don't really have that, then the 12 gudlin start right there from the first knot, which is right there on the beged. And again, you have one extra long string, which you do the windings with. If you don't have a long enough string, then you're able to do some of the windings with one thread and one with another. The fact is, when they had Tchelas, they did that. The Gemara talks about it in detail. There's many different opinions among Rishonim and Achronim how they did it exactly, but the gist of it is, the Gemara explains they would do some of the windings with a white thread and some of them with the Tchelas thread. So you see that that different windings can be done with a different thread. In practice, you buy a set of tzitzit strings nowadays, you have one that's made extra long for that purpose, but in case, let's say, you're reusing tzitzit, or in case it gets cut off or whatever, you're not obligated to use the same thread for all the windings.